WBZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Former President Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States, has died at the age of 100. ABC's Aaron Katursky on his presidency.
Jimmy Carter won the presidency in 1976 when the nation was still wounded by Watergate and Vietnam.
Our people are searching for new voices.
Under Carter, the Camp David Accords brought peace between Egypt and Israel. The Panama Canal Treaty was signed, and the U.S. established formal relations with China.
The United States of America and the People's Republic of China have agreed to recognize each other.
But energy prices soared, and Iran seized American hostages. After his defeat, Carter began one of the great second acts in American political history and became known for his pursuit of peace and human rights. Aaron Katursky, ABC News.
The former president had several health setbacks in recent years, and in February of 2023 had decided to end further medical treatments, instead choosing to receive hospice care. Former President Jimmy Carter, dead at 100 years old. This is ABC News. The man who shaped the cable television industry has died. ABC's Brian Clark has more from New York.
Charles Dolan founded Home Box Office in 1972, but HBO was just one chapter in the legacy of a man who helped shape modern media. That included the founding of Cablevision 1 year later. Dolan sold Cablevision to Altice in 2016 for over $17 billion, but his family's influence remains vast. They own the companies that control Madison Square Garden, Radio City Music Hall, the New York Knicks, and the New York Rangers. A family statement to Dolan-owned Newsday said the 98-year-old died of natural causes. Brian Clark, ABC News, New York.
An English Channel crossing turning deadly today, three migrants losing their lives. Rescuers say 45 others near the shoreline of France. Officials blame smugglers for overloading unsafe boats. 76-year-old actress and model Dale Haddon has died. Authorities believe the cause was carbon monoxide poisoning from a faulty heating system. She appeared in magazine covers in the 80s. This is ABC News.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph is a holiday classic, and there's a Wisconsin connection. Maury Laws composed music for the animated show in 1964. He continued arranging hundreds of songs from his Appleton home after leaving New York 20 years later. During that time, Laws created one quirky pop song. Do you know what it is? The answer coming up.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is sort of where a lot of people's core Christmas memories come from.
Emily Locke with the Oshkosh Museum on holiday traditions around Rudolph. Laws worked for the TV production company behind the show and also wrote music for Frosty the Snowman. And about the silly song he composed. Yes, itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini. Laws died in 2019 at the age of 95, but his music lives on as a wonderful slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. As we head into the new year, both shoppers and businesses are bracing for potential tariffs. Judith Ruiz Branch talks with a Wisconsin small business owner who says there couldn't be a worse time.
Eau Claire Outdoors is a shop that sells gear for camping and backwoods experiences. Owner Kate Felton says she carries products manufactured both in the U.S. and elsewhere.
The Trump tariffs really couldn't come at a worse time for small businesses. Certainly, there's no good time for this to come, but this moment in particular is just a very dangerous moment for prices to increase on small businesses.
Eau Claire small businesses saw record low sales this past year, she adds, including the lowest turnout for Small Business Saturday in over a decade. President-elect Donald Trump has promised to impose a new slate of tariffs as soon as he enters office in January. Tariffs, or taxes on imports, are paid by businesses purchasing goods from other countries. Economists say tariffs are typically passed on to consumers of anything the U.S. imports, from electronics and home goods to gas. Economics Department Chair Thomas Kemp at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire says he suspects a significant number of businesses in the state would feel the effects.
Let's say a small Wisconsin business is dependent upon a Chinese supplier for, say, machinery and equipment. That's going to impact them significantly. Or if they're a retailer that sells primarily goods and services made in China, they're going to be impacted by this.
In 2022, Wisconsin imports totaled $41 billion, the highest level recorded in state history, according to Wisconsin Economic Development. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Northern Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. A dense fog advisory tonight. Some freezing fog also possible. Lows in the mid-20s. Highs in the mid-30s on your Monday. We'll start off with some fog and become partly sunny in the afternoon. For Monday night, mostly cloudy. Low around 23.
Currently 33 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Kicking off the spotlight this week, we'll hear from Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Pete welcomed on Greg Schwemm this week, nationally syndicated Tribune columnist, to talk about a new book he wrote, Turning Gut Punches into Punchlines, A Comedian's Journey Through Cancer, Divorce, and Other Hilarious Stuff.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who likes to dine and dash, Pete Schwabba.
All right, so got some good text here regarding our conversation with Greg. My guest is Greg Schwemm. He is a syndicated columnist, nationally syndicated columnist. You can check out his work if you Google Greg Schwemm, Tribune Content Agency, Humor Hotel. Very funny stuff. But we were talking about baseball and the new Golden Bat Rule, and Eric from Lodi says, yeah, Major League Baseball has always been boring. Always. Minor league games are way more fun. I think he would have a lot of people agreeing with him on that. Anna from Madison says, Pete, there are plans to build a Buc-ee's in DeForest, Wisconsin. So they're coming north for sure. So, and then, Greg, you'll appreciate this. You asked me if I've ever broken the law, and you said everybody's broken the law. And I very arrogantly said I never have. My sister texted. Okay, here's a story. This is embarrassing. I basically embezzled from my own family. When I was like 12 years old or 11 years old, living on the northwest side of Chicago, we lived near an area called Six Corners. It was like Irving Park Road, Cicero, and there was a Sears. And that was the big department store at the time. So we Schwabba kids, the five of us, ages 11 to 6 or 5.
Perfect.
Yeah. Decided we had to pool our money to buy a second TV because that was the big thing in the late 70s. So we were going to save our money to buy a little black and white TV for like $100 at Sears. Well, I decided I needed a Chuck Foreman jersey instead, who was a running back for the Minnesota Vikings. Not even my team.
I know who he was.
Yeah. So I think my brother Tim and I went to Sears and bought a Chuck Foreman jersey. We just made an executive decision, and my sister
Molly.
You never
got a TV.
Yeah, and really, I should just thank the youngest three siblings for contributing to that because they never really got to enjoy it. I think it ended up in the goodwill heap before they grew into it. But so that is technically stealing. And here's another thing. I probably drove a car when I was under the influence. Not like I've never been sloppy drunk and driving, but I probably was legally drunk.
Yeah, and I think everybody's been probably guilty of that, sadly.
Yeah.
I certainly have.
So there you go. I am a criminal. And
yes, you are.
Thank you for my sister for throwing me under the bus and turning me into the authorities. The 608 says Buc-ee's is Quick Trip on crack. And that is a thing, Greg. When Quick Trip came to Marinette, Marinette has like 10,000 people. It's about 50 miles north here. And people lost their minds. They also said, we're getting two Quick Trips. Like it was a badge of honor. I'm like, it's a gas station. Yes. It's a fine establishment. It's great, but calm down.
Calling Buc-ee's a gas station would be like calling Disney World a carnival. No, you don't do that. Don't go there, Pete.
Like calling it a parish bazaar or something.
Yes, exactly.
That's funny. So let's talk about, you did an article too, I thought was funny about skinny dipping. And I've always been fascinated. Like I skinny dipped like once, maybe twice in a lake and maybe a couple times in a pool. Pool, much safer. I had a much better mindset.
Pool was much safer?
Well,
what time of day was this?
Noon. Just, it was a kid's party.
It was a private pool.
Yeah.
Like somebody's backyard.
Exactly. And I.
Oh, okay. I thought like.
No. I wasn't pool hopping or heading over to the neighborhood. But like when you do it in a lake, there, even a freshwater lake, there are still fish that bite. And that freaks me out.
True. I never thought about, actually, I did it in the ocean. Even thought about it. But yeah, the article was about that everybody should swim naked, hence skinny dipping.
Right.
And you should swim fully clothed at some point in your life. Because what you feel between the two of them is very interesting. Because my whole premise of the article was, if you swim fully clothed, you're weighted down and you feel like maybe you can't breathe and you're going to drown. But somehow you get to the dock or to the shore. You know, you panic for a minute,
right?
And you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then when you do it, you feel so good. You feel like, okay, that was something that was holding me down, and yet I rose above it, and you feel good about yourself.
Nice.
So that's why you should swim fully clothed, and you should skinny dip, because it just, there is a freedom about it, as I think anybody would agree to, that you come out of there and you're just like, I can't believe I did that. It was so fun.
Like getting away with a crime.
Want to do it again at some point, and I really don't care if anybody saw me.
Wow.
And I think that's a really good, I think that's a really good mindset to have. I know it sounds
interesting.
Sort of weird, but I think it just expresses freedom and the ability to take chances. And I think that's what a lot of people don't do today.
You would think, like, if you did make it back to a pier or shore or whatever, fully clothed, the first thing you would think about is, this would be a lot more fun without the wingtips.
Next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another part of the article, is you don't make a conscious decision to enter the water fully clothed. Something bad happened.
Right.
You missed the last step on the boat.
Right.
The boat and the dock, or something happened.
Oh,
you just ended up in the water in your clothes, and you had no idea that was going to be a part of your day.
You just wanted to take a Skyline cruise.
Right.
The next thing you know, you're in the Chicago River.
Right.
That's
right. And the Wendella people said, I'm sorry, there's no refunds for that.
All right. Last article, and then I want to ask you about Christmas. I love the phrase bottomless. All you can eat, you did an article about, it was called words and phrases to avoid as you age, and like a bottomless mimosa or whatever. And I love the all you can eat. Like, people think they're getting a deal. Businesses don't lose money. They don't do you a favor.
No.
Somehow they're still cleaning up. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. The bottomless thing, definitely, because like I live in the city of Chicago. So if you were to walk out of any place on Sunday and just walk down two blocks, any establishment that is open at that time is advertising bottomless something. It's bottomless mimosas. It's bottomless Bloody Marys. It's bottomless brunch something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about that term, but nothing good comes out of it.
Right.
Because you're either going to exit that place hammered, or you've just gained like 8 or 9 pounds or both.
Right.
Because you took the bottomless bait.
That's so funny.
Don't they have that in Wisconsin?
Oh yeah. We have a lot of
call it bottomless, or did you say all you can eat, or just come in and don't leave, or what is the phrase?
Situation. No, I think I have seen bottomless, but I see mostly all you can eat. Like, we have an all you can eat buffet.
Right.
And for whatever reason, it gives people a license to not dress up, to have their stomach hanging out of their shirt, to be looking around people while they're in line with the fear that there's going to be no more food by the time they get there. It's not a good scene. I would rather pay a waitress and just eat, you know, sensibly.
Yes. Yes. What is wrong with that?
I don't know.
What is wrong with sensible eating? I don't know. I don't know. I was in Europe for a good portion of the summer, and they eat very sensibly in Europe, and they're fun people. You know,
look at
they're
that.
Nice, fun people. There's nothing wrong with them. I don't understand it.
My guest is Greg Schwemm. Check out his work at the Humor Hotel. Google Humor Hotel and Greg Schwemm and check out his articles. Very funny stuff. He's also a stand-up comedian with decades in the business. And I want to ask you, Greg, every year I struggle to get I struggle with the bah humbug thing. Like, it's like, oh my God, another Christmas. Now the kids are a little older. It's not quite. Mm-hmm. How do you, as a comedian,
magic is gone.
As a comedian or a writer or just someone who is, I think everybody gets jaded to some degree with old age. How do you keep that Christmas childlike wonder as a comedian and a writer?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is memory. When you think of your past Christmases that you spent with your family or that you spent with your kids, I think you and me as comedians are really good at putting a comedic spin on that. Like how did that happen? Like, okay. One year, my daughter finally got her cell phone that she always wanted for Christmas. And there's a memory in there and there's material in there. And I choose to do that. I think as you get older, like you said, there's really nothing about Christmas, I think as you get older that you're like, wow, this is really weird. This is new. This is something I've never, ever experienced before. I think that's natural and normal. But I think if you look where the joy comes is you look back and say, wow, we did that in 1984. Or we did that when my children were 7 and 12. And we spent all night putting together such and such. Or we finally like relented and gave her cell phone or her first Apple product or whatever.
The Bucky's gift certificate, whatever it was.
which I also pilfered from the rack. I think that's how I like to spend it. And I think it makes it very fun.
That's a great answer. And I think as you get older, you realize, the magic isn't in believing in things that don't exist or know, Santa Claus. I don't know if there's any kids listening, but it's just that you come together and you have this time with your loved ones. That's the minor, that's the little miracle taking place that people tend to forget when they keep their eye on bigger things.
Absolutely.
Hey man, this was fun. When you write that new article, let's have you come back and I'd love to see where you take that.
Yeah. And if you have any listeners living in the Chicago area, just can I quickly plug?
Absolutely.
I'll be headlining Zanies.
Oh, cool.
In Old Town on Monday, January 13th.
Love that club.
Come on out.
So great.
Okay.
Go see Greg Schwemm. Check out his articles. Have a great Christmas and great holidays, buddy.
All right, my man.
All right.
You too.
Greg Schwemm. Conrad, how are we doing on time?
Oh, we got about a minute left.
Okay. So let's do this. This is when you know you have a good texter. Like Steady Eddie, I see his texts and I have to gauge like how long they are. Do I have time to read this now or do I have to make the show a mini series? how am I going to read Steady Eddie's text? But I think we have time now. So Steady Eddie, he's in the 608. He says, Pete, the best gag gift that I ever gave was a gift for a young nephew when he was 5 or 6. The gift was wrapped in a small box. Then that box was put into another slightly larger wrap box. Then that box was put into another wrapped box. I continued that theme a couple more times. Don't remember what the actual gift was. It doesn't really matter. For me, my nephew, and the rest of the family, it was a hilarious Christmas Eve moment. That's magic right there. That kind of stuff is fun. Thank you, Steady Eddie. Sorry, Steadfast Edward. All right, when we come back, we will have Sean Katz back. He is the marketing director for the City of Marinette, telling us about a really cool event going on Saturday. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Tuesday night on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people at Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Spotlight. This week, Wisconsin's electors gathered to cast their votes for Donald Trump. One of them, former Governor Tommy Thompson, said it's time for everyone to turn the page on 2020's fake elector scheme. Pat Kreitlow responds, hell no.
All right, we got the snow coming, and now Kelly Clarkson is singing. It's definitely the holiday season now, so I feel a lot better. Kelly has nothing to do with today's history lesson. It's just the day for seasonal music, but we'll have today's history lesson coming up just a quick 30 minutes from now here on Up North News Radio. Greg, did you hear about the fake electors who met at the state capitol yesterday?
No, Pat, I did not hear about the fake electors who met in Madison yesterday.
Oh, you know why you didn't hear about them?
Why?
It didn't happen. It didn't happen. There weren't any fake electors meeting at the state capitol yesterday, just the real ones. Isn't that crazy?
But wait a minute, Pat. My uncle sent me an email that said forward, 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 forward. Do you see what Biden's trying to do with our elections now?
Yeah, look, here's the way it's written up in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Laura Schulte is a great reporter. I'm not finding fault with her, but I'm going to take issue with a turn of a phrase here that you'll hear in just a second. It starts with, what a difference 4 years make. Wisconsin's 10 Electoral College votes were cast Tuesday afternoon without fanfare for Donald Trump and running mate J.D. Vance. 4 years after a slate of fake electors signed paperwork falsely claiming Trump won the 2020 election in Wisconsin, comma, setting the stage for a national debate over election denialism. No, it wasn't setting the stage for a national debate over election denialism. It was an attempt to steal an election by saying he's trying to steal the election as they tried to steal the election. And we're still framing it as a national debate after dozens of court cases and zero, still to this day, zero evidence of anything untoward on any kind of a scale that could tilt an election. That we still are framing this as some kind of a national debate over election denialism is just a crime from the standpoint of how our media communicated the age of Trump to the voters. That's me putting it in words I can use on the radio.
I think that the, you know, 4 years ago, the media was fervent to report on all of these attempts to overthrow our democracy. I think they were as shocked as we were. I think they were as eager to put the truth out there or report what was happening. And the truth was, as you mentioned, dozens of court cases proved this was not a stolen election, yet people did try to overthrow our democracy through fake elector schemes. And now what I think what's happened is that it's 4 years later, they've talked about it so much, And they almost want to say something to the effect of, well, there's two sides to the story, if you will. No, there isn't. There's there isn't. One side. Right. They try to steal the election, period. That's it. Done. Don't but give him course, leeway.
Here's the framing offered by one of the electors, former governor Tommy Thompson, who was asked about the 2020 elector scandal. And here's his quote. Isn't it about time to turn the page? I mean, we can fight over the election of 2020 for the next 4 years. What does it get us? Isn't it about time to say, you know, we've had a lot of differences. This is the time to start trying to mend ways and solving America's problems, Wisconsin's problems. No kidding. No kidding. Because you know what? The guy that won 4 years ago also was looking to solve America's problems and Wisconsin's problems, but was endlessly hampered by the big lie, because it wasn't, to be blunt, it wasn't properly called a lie by nearly enough newsrooms in this country who, for whatever reason, wanted to play it safe or wanted to protect their access to Trump and Republicans, who had the tables been turned, would have called out somebody like a Hillary Clinton in a heartbeat.
Oh,
if she tried to make the assertions of the past 4 years with zero evidence. I try not to be disgusted when talking about things like this, but when I hear a quote like that and the way that this is still being framed as a national debate over election denialism, you get right to the root at, you know, where many people's frustrations are with American democracy and media in the year 2024.
I don't disagree with you, and it's something we've talked about on Jane's show many, many times, is this inherent and now almost immovable double standard of, well, the GOP, they have their points, whereas if a Hillary supporter would have tried anything, it would have been a 10-day story on Fox News. It would have been, this is the end of our democracy. It is one guy in Georgia tried to cast two ballots. That's it. We're done. Hillary's a thief. Hillary's a crook.
Yeah. Oh, they'll take the smallest morsel of something. You know, like 10 or so or 10 trans athletes among 50,000, yeah, you know, nationwide, and turn that into a national scandal because they've got the media ecosystem to amplify something and do something with it, and enough people hear only that, and they tend to believe it. And that, to me, is, you know, leads to this thing about turning the page on the 2020 election. I just want to make sure I say this in you know, direct possible terms. Oh, hell no. No. You had a couple of Trump attorneys who were in court because the Wisconsin Department of Justice is charging them with felony forgery, I think it is, for trying to dupe Wisconsin's fake electors. The fake electors in other states are actually facing the possibility of criminal penalties. And while Trump may have been able to, you know, persuade enough people to vote for him again and can therefore pardon a lot of things at the federal level, I hope everybody with a conscience and a sense of justice at the state level does not take their foot off the gas, because this ain't over. Nobody should try to steal an American election the way these people did and then get away with it. And they will if you just say, time to turn the page. No way.
Yeah. Agreed. I 100% agree.
Yeah. So that's why he didn't hear about fake electors at the Capitol yesterday. There weren't any. The side that lost, as is supposed to happen in a democracy, says, okay, we lost. It's not going to be fun for the next few years, but we accept what the voters had to say, and we gear up for the next run. That's how to do it the right way. And frankly, that should be rewarded a little more often. Melissa Baldoff is next. You're up north.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Former President Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States, has died at the age of 100. ABC's Aaron Katursky on his presidency.
Jimmy Carter won the presidency in 1976 when the nation was still wounded by Watergate and Vietnam.
Our people are searching for new voices.
Under Carter, the Camp David Accords brought peace between Egypt and Israel. The Panama Canal Treaty was signed, and the U.S. established formal relations with China.
The United States of America and the People's Republic of China have agreed to recognize each other.
But energy prices soared, and Iran seized American hostages. After his defeat, Carter began one of the great second acts in American political history and became known for his pursuit of peace and human rights. Aaron Katursky, ABC News.
The former president had several health setbacks in recent years, and in February of 2023 had decided to end further medical treatments, instead choosing to receive hospice care. Former President Jimmy Carter, dead at 100 years old. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers skate to victory. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college hockey. The Wisconsin Badgers beat Ferris State in a shutout, 8-0 last night in the holiday faceoff at Fiserv Forum. Three Badgers players, Quinn Finley, Rylan Mosley, and Kyle Kokkonen, each scored a pair of goals. Wisconsin advances to the final tonight against UConn. NBA. The Bucks lose in Chicago to the Bulls, 116-111. Damian Lillard was back with 29 points and 12 assists, but it wasn't enough. Giannis Antetokounmpo missing his fourth straight game. He's dealing with a non-COVID illness. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers.
It felt like we were playing with fool's gold the entire night. I thought defensively we had no presence. You know, think about it. I think they were shooting 58% at halftime. We were shooting 44% and it was a two-point game. So you felt like either we're going to start really defending and then our offense will go up, or we're not and it's going to be a tight game, and that's what it was.
NFL, the Packers against the Vikings in Minnesota. A recap coming up after the game tonight. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Northern Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. A dense fog advisory tonight. Some freezing fog also possible. Lows in the mid-20s. Highs in the mid-30s on your Monday. We'll start off with some fog and become partly sunny in the afternoon. For Monday night, mostly cloudy. Low around 23.
Right now, 35.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A 2023 decision in an Arkansas redistricting case found individual voters did not have a private right of action to challenge the maps. The state of Louisiana tried the same tactic in its chaotic gerrymandering case, but was refused on June 24th. Be looking for another challenge in 2025. Defying precedent, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals held in a 2023 Arkansas racial gerrymandering case that individual voters do not have a private right of action under the VRA Section 2. It said only the U.S. Justice Department could bring such cases, despite individuals having filed 90% of previous challenges. Calling it radical, scholars expected it to be quickly overturned, but this January, the full Eighth Circuit refused to rehear the case. Seeing an opening, Louisiana asked the full Fifth Circuit to rehear its gerrymandering case on the same grounds, with 13 other Republican attorneys general urging a no private right of action decision. In a close vote Monday, the Fifth Circuit refused that rehearing. For now, the Eighth Circuit decision still only affects Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. But it's clear that private right of action is the new battleground and will almost certainly reach the U.S. Supreme Court. We've linked to more on the private right of action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Dom Salvia Show.
How about this one? Harvey Kay, a Delano Democrat.
The problem with that is that that was his mother's family name. You might not realize that he had a father, too.
Come on, man.
Subscribe to my arguments, and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right, I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Dom Salvia.
Next time, what does former FBI and CIA Director William Webster have to say about Cash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard? Also, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, on the rise of homelessness and political exhaustion. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we're going to hear from Earl Ingram. And this week on the Earl Ingram Show, he was joined by John Dietrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to discuss an article he wrote regarding a woman whose son accidentally shot himself in the hand with her gun. She was charged for the incident, and they discuss how those charges have had an effect on her life.
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. So today I've dedicated all of the music to Tower of Power in their very special Christmas album. On a Motown Monday, my guest is Mr. John Dietrich. He is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And so we're talking about, you know, just a many different aspects of a story of a woman named Brianna Givens, who unfortunately her young 2-year-old son got a hold to her gun and shot himself in the hand. So John, I guess where we need to go next is the fact that there is a deputy district attorney named Matthew Trobison. Who was pressing to have felony charges brought against this mother after all of the pain that she's gone through. Your thoughts on why he was pressing to have the felony charges brought against a grieving mother who was already going through a lot of pain?
Well, that's right. So this is as I alluded to, the Milwaukee handles this differently. Our investigation found that almost every single case since 2017 in Milwaukee County, it's about 54 cases, have been charged as felony. Outstate, there are felonies, but it's much less likely that they're going to be charged as felonies outstate. Torbenson, you mentioned him. He is deputy district attorney, so he handles all the cases, not only these kinds of cases, but other child abuse cases where children die at the hands of another or are parents and caregivers and so forth. So in talking at length with Matt Torbenson, who I've known for a long, he's been here in the DA's office as long as I've been a reporter, his view of this is that this is very serious conduct, that, you know, these easily could have been deaths, that there has to be a strong message sent, and that it he also is trying to accomplish taking away somebody's right to own a gun by charging these as felonies. And the way this has happened, there is actually a state law passed in 91 that envisions that this would be a misdemeanor. But Torbenson and his team, those prosecutors working for him, do no longer use that statute for the most part, and use a statute that was actually passed with the help of Torbenson in 2017. He helped write the current law, and it's a child abuse, so it's felony child neglect. And, you know, he said at that point, yes, he understands that there is suffering on the part of the parents, the grief, the punishment that happens. His view is that there are other people that he has to stand up for, the victims and other family members in society that need to be represented here.
The real issue is that there's a double standard. And as you so aptly wrote, 65% of black people in the state of Wisconsin live in Milwaukee. And so these cases are charged differently in Milwaukee County than they are outside of Milwaukee County. What do you attribute that to?
Well, so one of the things to keep in mind is that these incidents happen more often. So roughly half of the incidents that we found over this 8-year period happen in Milwaukee County.
Because there are more people in Milwaukee County than
there are true. It is true, but it goes beyond population. In other words, we don't have half the population in the state. So it is higher, but you're right. We have a larger population, but it goes beyond the population. And so, I think it's complex reasons why that may be. That, as we talked about, the feeling of insecurity, home defense, police response, these are all complicated things that play into this. But this response being handled differently does end up creating a racial disparity. Because when we look at this in Milwaukee County, almost all of the entire caseload is African American. Now, it's important to note, I don't have incidents of cases where white defendants were not charged. So I don't have that case. But in talking to experts about this, their point was that certainly there might be differences in the occurrence of these happening, but not like 100% or 99 point, whatever percent. So there is this, and I mentioned this to Torbenson, and he says, well, yeah, but all of my victims are African American. So all my children are African American. And that's something that I can't, overlook. But as you point out, there are outside of Milwaukee, there are instances of white defendants being charged with similar conduct with misdemeanors.
So I guess what I would say, John, is, and I've said this before, it is certainly, this is not an easy out. It's, she certainly was careless with leaving a gun under her mattress. Regardless of how, dangerous the environment is. And yes, I would think that what we are looking for from, as a citizen of the state of Wisconsin, is for there to be some punishment. But here's a single mother. And once you attach a felony, long term, what do you do to her and the child and her children that you are talking about protecting? Once you connect her to a felony, she stands a chance on losing her employment and never gaining employment again. So is he causing a bigger problem long term for her and her family by charging her for the felony? And in the end, is that the right answer?
You raise some really good, and people may not appreciate this. When you look at the end of Brianna's case, right, she pled out to a misdemeanor and she served a probation sentence. So she didn't, other than the initial. But here's the whole reality of what happened. She's charged with a felony. She's a nurse. So she loses her job immediately because a felony neglect charge is, no job in healthcare hands on. So she was in school trying to become an RN. She ended up she lost that dream. She was 2 years into that, but you can't finish that degree because you can't be hands on to finish your degree because you have the neglect. And even though it's a misdemeanor conviction, she ended up, that's going to be a prohibitor. It also looks like a felony because on CCAP, that's the way it's marked online. Child Protective Services came. She ended up being evicted, was homeless for a while. And, and now she's back to waiting tables, a job that she had when she was a teenager.
855-752-4842. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. John, I clearly understand from the perspective of the DA that, we have a responsibility to protect the children as a society. I'm not unmindful of that. But at the same time, that he's attempting to do that, you know, you've kind of destroyed the family. And because waiting tables is not going to be, you know, is not going to be able to, for a single mother with three children, anything that's going to allow her to live any kind of quality of life. And long term, the children are going to have a difficult time, you know, as they grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the long term impacts of being charged with a felony are, I mean, just that decision to start at a felony is seismic, because it ends up having immediate impacts and then long term, you know, impacts. Because if you start at that high level, you're more likely to, and, you know, and in talking to Brianna, she did not. I mean, she ended up having to take a parenting class, and, you know, there was some other supervision. She had a gun safety class. She didn't disagree with any of that. And you know, in talking to some folks around the system, it's like, is there a way to do that without putting the, you know, the felony in there was the question.
So Tony said, I get they are sending a message, but no one's circumstances are improved from this outcome.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and you raised it, that, you know, in terms of long-term cycles that perpetuates, that this is what we really wanted to raise in the article, was really help people to feel, because I think people might not understand what the pain is, you know, and again, to switch over to what Torgensen sees, as he says very poignantly in the article. You know, he sees the autopsy photos of these children when they die. He sees all this evidence. And so we just really wanted to surface, is this the right approach in these kind of cases?
So when you go back, and as you did in a thorough investigation, and you go back to former Governor Mike McCallum and what their rationale was for creating the law that they created. And as I read that, you know, he clearly stated that back then, you know, when they came up with that, that maybe today that should be looked at again and tailored in a mm-hmm. different manner. Have you been able to talk with anybody in the legislature who may agree with what former Governor McCallum had to say?
Well, former Governor McCallum, what he's looking at is he's talking about how this law was passed in 1991 that would make it a misdemeanor. There's some elements in that that are important. One is that the grief of the parent should be considered by the DA. It's not shall language, so it does allow for charging. Deputy DA Torbenson said that they do consider that. The other thing, though, is that there is a 7-day waiting period for arrest. We don't see that being done. And the reason it isn't in Milwaukee County is because they're charging it under another offense. But there is a lot of interest in the, you know, in this law. And there has been laws that have been acts that have been introduced, legislation have been introduced. And I know those co-sponsors are interested to see our investigation and say, can we tailor new proposals in a way that takes into account the reality of what's being lived in Milwaukee County and across the state.
You know, Tony says, where does John see this issue going in the future? Where is it trending?
Well, I think there's going to be more discussion right now in terms of the safe storage law did not advance. Representative Andraka from Whitefish Bay has put this forward with some of her colleagues on the Democratic side. It hasn't advanced, but it'll be interesting to see if this might change the discussion a little bit, because, again, it raises some issues of, is there another way to bring this up? I guess the other thing we're talking about, too, is that the idea of training, the idea, because we can talk a little bit about this, that we did find some pretty innovative ideas around safety in the home when it came to firearms. And I just wonder if there might be more efforts in that area.
Well, you know, Brianna mentioned that, you know, she had a gun in the past, and so she thought about, and it got stolen or lost or something. And she had thought about, well, what happens if someone does break in and I've got the gun in a lock kit box, mm-hmm. and so by the time I get to the lock box and get it open, I'm not going to be able to protect myself and my family. So we want to talk a little bit more about that, you know, what that really means, and if there are any others in this listening audience who feel the same way. I know that that's the law. If you got this gun, it's got to be locked away in the lockbox. If somebody breaks in, you're not going to be able to get to it, and that's one of the reasons why she had this gun under her mattress, for her fear that they'd break in and she wouldn't have time to go and get it to protect herself and her family. 855-752. My guest is John Dietrich, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you on a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up hour one of the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Matt and Air on Air. Jane and Greg welcomed on U.S. Representative Mark Pocan to discuss the tragic school shooting in Madison. Mark also reveals the horrendous truth that some national news sources canceled interviews with him after discovering the death toll was not as high as initially reported.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane, Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Cal B coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Putz de Leon continues to actively ruin. After the 11 o'clock news, we are going to continue our statewide text to win contest for the grown-up gift list. So stick around for that. We will have a keyword for you to text in. Right now, though, very happy to have him join us and carve out some time for us. U.S. Representative Mark Pocan from the 2nd Congressional District is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jane. Thanks for having me. And, you know, a tough moment in our district yesterday. So still dealing with a lot of that and trying to get more information.
We were talking about that before you joined us. We've spent most of the hour talking about that. And I just think, Representative, people are so frustrated by the lack of action. And when we are told things like, well, this is the price you pay for freedom, and this is, you know, my Second Amendment shall not be infringed. And there are so many things I think a vast majority of Americans agree on when it comes to universal background checks and red flag laws. And yet this happens over and over and over again.
Look, I think we got to take it a step up. This is a uniquely American problem. So we have to look at what we're doing wrong as a country. We have more guns than people. We've had 480 mass shootings so far this year, 80 school shootings this year. Look, this is a problem. And first, you have to accept the problem. And then we got to figure out what we got to do. You know, during COVID, we all stepped up and did things. Whenever there's an epidemic, you do something. We have an epidemic of gun violence right now. And we need to talk seriously about how to do that. From there, we got to get the policymakers and the state legislature in Washington to do something. But honestly, first, we have to do something. I mean, the saddest thing that's happened, well, not the saddest, but one of the saddest in the last 24 hours is we had some media yesterday, national media outlets call back and cancel some interviews today. I don't care for me. I want them to talk about the issue, but it was because they said it was only 2 deaths, not 5 as originally reported. If that's the attitude, that's actually the problem and we got to solve it.
Absolutely.
That's horrifying.
Tell me about it.
That's just horrifying. Yeah. So now we only care if it's like 6 or 10. That's really sickening.
Yeah, no, that was my attitude. And I'm not calling them out by name, but I've called them out pretty much in every interview since then, because it is precisely the problem. I mean, this shooting is a 15-year-old girl. I don't think you're going to find a magnificently written manifesto that's going to point directly to the reason. But if you can't take your kid to school and know that they're going to come home at the end of the day, we have a problem. And this has happened 80 times this year, 480 mass shootings this year. It's uniquely a United States problem. We have to start with that, and then let's get something done on this.
Representative Pocan, if people call their lawmakers, does that make a difference? If we flood offices with phone calls about this, would that actually make anybody sit up and take notice?
You know, I think you flood not just elected officials, but flood the media, flood others with it too. We have to start talking about this as a problem that, you know, it's good to be number one when you're America, but not in this area. And this is a number one we should all be really deeply embarrassed by and want to do something about. But we've got to have a different societal approach towards guns and gun violence. And until we do, there's plenty of politicians that are going to do whatever the gun manufacturers say, because that's who funds their campaigns and that's who they feel the political pressure from. But more so, we have to care enough that we force those politicians to stand up to the gun manufacturers.
Something else we spoke about earlier, Congressman, was the fact that, you know, a 15-year-old girl, 15-year-old child doesn't wake up one day and decide to walk into their school and start causing this kind of horrific damage and violence. It's another discussion point as far as mental health in this country as well. It is another talk that we just can't seem to get on.
Well, it's always talked about and we need more funding. And then when it actually comes time to come up with the bucks, then that all goes away.
Well, and also when I was a kid, we had tornado drills and we went under the desk. And, you know, maybe that wasn't the most useful thing against a tornado. But right now they have shooter drills in school. Like, this is a different reality that we are just accepting, and there's no reason to be accepting this. And, you know, I do think that the pressure has to be in a lot of places, at least for me. You know, we have these moments of silence. We're going to do one today for this shooting on the floor of Congress, and there'll be no moment of action after that.
Right.
So, you know, I've done this so many times in the 12 years I've been here. I can't tell you how frustrating that is, but more importantly, we have to accept that this is a national problem more than any elected officials. This is our problem, and we all better figure out how to embrace it.
Go to myvote.wi.gov, put in your address. That will bring up the addresses and phone numbers of all your elected representatives. Call them, write them, be polite, be respectful. But you're right, Representative, we can't just sit back and go, well, that was another one, you know, tomorrow's another day. We have to keep up. We have to get some pressure going and keep that pressure going if anything is ever going to change in this country.
And, you know, I give credit to law enforcement, too. When they were asked the question, shouldn't that school have been more fortified? No, we shouldn't have to fortify every school.
Yes.
What next? Every hospital, what's next? Every gas station? No, maybe we just address the problem instead of putting everything into a fortress in this country. So, again, we got to accept that we have a unique problem on this planet. And it's not good to be number one in this category and do something about it.
We're not going to have enough time to roast Louis DeJoy over the coals, unfortunately, and talk about the potential of privatizing the post office. We will have to have you back for that. Representative Mark Pocan with the 2nd Congressional District, thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Stay tuned. News is coming up next. Keep it right here. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Yeah. Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually a really good idea. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Jimmy Carter dies. I'm Dave Packer. Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, has died. He was 100 years old.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Jimmy Carter was a Georgia peanut farmer with a toothy grin and a promise to turn the page after Watergate.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual.
Voters propelled him to victory.
ABC now projects Carter is the winner.
Carter's inaugural struck a hopeful tone.
The American dream endure.
But
a one-term president, Carter faced domestic setbacks, a challenging economy, and the Iranian hostage crisis during his 4 years in office, but a celebrated post-presidency, working for decades with Habitat for Humanity and traveling the globe as a fierce defender of human rights. Carter's passing just over a year after the death of former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, his beloved wife of 77 years, and his childhood sweetheart. This is ABC News.